Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome to the webinar on Foreign Investment Structure Seen as a Colorable Device and Held Illegal. This webinar is being organized by Nishit Desai Associates. If you have any questions which remain unaddressed at the end of this session, please email them to corpwebinar@nishitdesai.com. That is corpwebinar@nishitdesai.com. We request all participants to view our hotline under subject available on our website www.nishitdesai.com or on our mobile app Nishit Mobile. The speakers are Nischal Joshipura, Partner M&A and Private Equity, Nishit Desai Associates; Ruchir Sinha, Co-Head Private Equity and M&A, Nishit Desai Associates; Ashish Kabra, Senior Member, International Litigation and Dispute Resolution Practice, Nishit Desai Associates. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Also, you can download our mobile applet, Nishit Mobile, which is available on the App Store for iOS device, Play Store for Android, and BlackBerry World to access the current updates and videos. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nischal Joshipura. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Welcome to all the participants joining this webinar. Today, we'll be discussing the Bombay High Court judgment on Uptown versus IDBI Trusteeship Limited, where Bombay High Court has held FDI structure as a colorable device and illegal. This judgment has resulted in huge anxiety among foreign investors who have used FDI structure in the form of Holdco, Opco, and this is going to have significant repercussions on other FDI structures which have been used by foreign investors for investments into India. Let's go briefly to the facts of the case. FMO, a Dutch investor, had invested in an Indian holdco in the form of equity shares and compulsorily convertible debentures. The holdco was held 10% by FMO, which is a Dutch investor, and 90% by the promoters in their individual capacity and one of their group entity, which is called Uptown. So the holdco shareholding was 10% by Dutch investor and 90% by the promoter and their holding company. The holdco in turn invested the funds received from the Dutch investor into two opcos which had one real estate project each underneath them. One opco was developing the SRA or the slum rehabilitation project, and the other opco was going to develop the industrial park. Both the opcos were 100% owned by the holdco. The funds were infused from holdco into opco in the form of optionally convertible debentures, which carried a coupon of 14.75% per annum. These optionally convertible debentures were, there was a charge that was created for repayment of these optionally convertible debentures in favor of IDBI Trusteeship Limited, which was acting as a debenture trustee. And there was a corporate guarantee which was given by Uptown, which was one of the shareholders of the holdco. So in nutshell, a Dutch investor invested in holdco in the form of equity and CCD. This money was used to infuse into the two opcos in the form of OCD, and the OCDs were secured through corporate guarantee of one of the promoter group entity in favor of IDBI Trusteeship Limited. As far as the contractual rights are concerned, the Dutch investor had the right to nominate two directors on the board of holdco, and the promoters along with their holding company had right to appoint four directors on the board of holdco. There were certain specific clauses in the document that any matter with respect to the optionally convertible debentures issued by the OpCos can be dealt with only by the nominees of the Dutch investor on the board of the holdco. What happened after that was there was a default that was default that happened by the OpCos in repayment of the optionally convertible debenture to the holdco, because of which the security package was invoked and the guarantee, which was corporate guarantee, which was the main security, also got invoked, which was given by Hubtown, which was one of the main shareholders of the holdco. And then there was this matter went to the High Court. And we can now discuss what were the arguments put forth by both the parties with respect to the FDI structure. So my first question goes to Ashish. What were the arguments against the structure, that the structure that was used by FMO is illegal?
Thank you, Nishchal. And firstly, good afternoon to all our guests who have joined in on this webinar. So the arguments of the respondents were essentially directed to show that structure was nothing but a device to ensure that the foreign investor obtains an assured return. So the respondents argued and objected to this particular petition on the grounds that the amounts invested by the foreign investor in the holdco was nothing but a sham which had to be moved down straight away into the downstream subsidiary or the OpCos. So the respondent said that the holdco was interposed only as a nominal recipient of the FDI, and the only purpose was to structuring that one investor gets an assured return. The holdco or the contracts which they entered into with the foreign investor and the articles of the holdco, they were amended. They were amended to provide rights to the holdco so that it ensured that the holdco or the foreign investor who is acting through the board of the holdco obtains full rights on its investment in the holdco and subsequently as it moved downstream. The respondent said that the foreign investor under the FDI policy could not have directly invested into the OCDs which is of the OpCos which was there, and they, because under the foreign investment policy, they are not seen as an equity instrument. Further, upon the holdco receiving the returns on these OCDs, the CCDs which the holdco had in the foreign investors had in the holdco were to convert into equity such that the foreign investors holding in the holdco goes up to 99%. So essentially reiterating the structure.
So they were holding 10% in the holdco, and the compulsorily convertible debentures which the foreign investor had in the holdco could convert into 99% of equity of the holdco upon default.
Indeed. So the idea was, while the OCDs are there and currently there in the OpCo and they remain alive, the shareholding of the foreign investor in the holdco would be limited to the percent, to the 10%, would be limited to 10%. However, once the OCDs are redeemed and the holdco obtains the returns from these OCDs, the shareholding of the foreign investors, which was earlier limited to 10%, would increase to 99%, because the CCDs which they were holding in the holdco were to convert in such manner. So this, the whole structuring which was done over here was intended to give effect to a particular objective, which was to get the assured return to the foreign investor. Now, obviously, the assured return is something which is not permissible under the FDI policy or the FDI regime. And the respondents and accordingly suggested, as the assured returns are not permitted, and this entire exercise being done to give that assured return, this structure cannot be enforced by a court, and essentially guarantee being part of this structure cannot be given effect to. So this was the arguments which the respondents put forth to show that the structure cannot be given effect to, and the courts cannot pass the orders which the petitioners are in favor of the petitioners which they have, for which they have approached the court.
Okay. Were there any other points which were used to prove that the structure was illegal apart from assured return?
But there could have been other points which could have been used to indicate that the structure, to actually challenge the structure, such as the creation of security,
right.
Which was a security interest which was there.
Correct.
Though the courts have not specifically dealt with this issue in the judgment, and the stress has been on the aspect of assured return,
mm-hmm.
the security interest creation was also an aspect which is not permitted under the FBI policy. That is, if the security interest cannot be created in your investments made under the FBI regime to secure returns to the foreign investor.
Okay.
In this fact situation, what had happened was the security interest had been created at the OPCO level over the assets of the OPCO in favor of a debenture trustee, which security interest was essentially being controlled by the nominee directors of the foreign investor who were acting through the holdco.
Okay.
And at that level. So looking into that, the security interest was also something that could have been seen, or this transaction could have been seen as a colorable device to create a security interest, which otherwise is not directly permitted under the FBI regime to be created.
Okay. Okay. So we heard your point, which in favor of the argument that the structure is illegal. But the petitioner had also put forward certain points why the structure was legal. So do you want to deal with that?
Yeah. So I think before I think for all the people on the call, you know, please refer to our hotline on this topic. And the last webinar invite, which you might have received, has a link to the hotline, because it will be important to understand the, you know, entire facts, arguments, proofs, quotes, and inclusions in the right light. So, I mean, clearly, you know, there were about 3 to 4 points that the petitioner kind of made to kind of establish that the structure was perfectly legit from an FBI policy perspective. And I'll right now stick on only to the points that were made. And what other points could be made, I think we'll probably discuss later in the session. But I think the first point which they made was that, you know, FBI really talks about FBI compliance, right? So the sector in which the FBI came in was entirely FBI compliant. So the holdco was having real estate projects which were FBI compliant. The money came in as an FBI compliant, compulsorily convertible debenture. The money was subjected to all the FDI conditionalities, pricing and everything, so there was no issue with the FDI coming in, you know, at the holdco level. The FDI policy, you know, the second point was that FDI policy does not contemplate any kind of end-use restrictions. It does not come out in the judgment, but, you know, one of the points that is critical to be noted is, you know, there are many regulatory policies that set out end-use restrictions. Like when you bring money by way of ECB, it says, you know, you cannot use money for rupee, in this time your rupee loans, working capital, or, you know, even borrowing and lending in rupee regulations set out end-use restrictions. There are no such end-use restrictions when it comes to FDI. The proceeds of an FDI, today, the way you look at it, and it's a regulation, so you need to look at it on a strict interpretation basis, there are no restrictions on end-use as such. Third point, I think Ashish made the point that the court has kind of held that this was a fixed return structure. Well, fixed return from where, right? At the holdco level, the FMO invested by way of CCDs. CCDs are themselves entitled to have a fixed rate of return. Until they're converted, they're still debt. And you can claim reduction benefit. There is an interest rate which can be given. And SBI prime lending rate, which is around 14, overall interest which you can give on CCDs is also about 17%. So in this case, the OCDs were returning only 14.5%. Therefore, even legitimately, I was entitled to a 14.5%. Last point was on, you know, pricing and restrictions around that. CCDs, or compulsorily convertible debentures, were the instrument that was subscribed to by FMO. Even if the holdco receives all the money from OPCO, it's not like it can immediately repatriate all the money. There will still be pricing restrictions. So, which will be today be an internationally accepted methodology. So if, there is a project issue at the holdco level, the holdco, one of the assets is not performing well, the valuation of the CCDs or the pricing will automatically go down. So it's not like by doing CCDs, or by doing downstream OCDs, the entire pricing mechanism has been circumvented. So there is still a pricing issue, and the CCDs will, if when you talk about repatriation, there is no repatriation possible unless the CCDs are converted and all of it. So there is still a pricing restriction. The investment was FDI compliant. The interest rate I could have anyway earned, and there were no end use restrictions which proscribes me from investing downstream. So I think those were the three or four broad points that were made.
So we heard about what were the arguments of the respondent on why the structure was illegal, and what were the arguments of the petitioner on why the structure was legal. So Ashish, what did the court held finally?
So the court in the this judgment ruled in favor of the respondents and held that the structure was indeed a colorable device, which was done to basically circumvent the exchange control regulation. The court accepted the arguments of the respondents, and the court actually took note of the various facts, most importantly the contractual and the shareholder rights which were there. The court took note of the fact that firstly, investment made by the foreign investor in the holdco was to move straight away downstream. Now this is specifically in context of where it was argued by the petitioners that the business or the holdco had an FDI compliant project. The court noted in this regard that while the holdco had an FDI compliant project, the money which was invested was not to be utilized towards it or for any purposes connected to such project. The money was contractually preordained to flow down into the opcos in form of investment in OCDs. So therefore, the court obviously noted that it being an FDI compliant project or having an FDI compliant project would not in that sense suffice. The parties also need to show that the investment amount should in certain ways be utilized towards that project, or in any manner utilization be connected towards an FDI compliant project. Now, this is a peculiar aspect but indeed does come out of the judgment. Further, the court observed that while CCDs, or rather the foreign investors could have directly invested into CCDs of the opcos and still obtain the same interest rate which it was obtaining on the OCDs which were there, or the OCDs which it had acquired indirectly through the the holdcos. So court noted that while the interest is allowed, the CCDs could have borne that 14.5 interest rate, CCDs here being if the foreign investors had directly invested in the opco. However, the distinction that the court drew out in this regard was with regard to the fact that the investment here was in form of OCDs as opposed to CCDs. CCDs are something which is seen as an equity instrument under the FDI regime, whereas OCDs are not. OCDs permit that you take the principal amount as well, or give the option of the party investing into OCDs to take back the principal amount as well, which is not the case in CCDs. So therefore, the very fact that the interest would have been obtained on the CCDs is something which did not really come to the aid of the petitioner. Further, on the aspect of pricing guidelines, now it was, as Ruchir pointed out, that pricing guidelines would ultimately still be applicable in the event the foreign investor exits from the holdco. But the court noted in that case that those pricing guidelines were in effect by that time, the foreign investor would have reaped the benefits of the OCDs. The court noted that the OCDs, or the money which would be there on the OCDs, which would now come in form of money and would lie in the holdco, and the CCDs were structured in such manner that upon redemption of these OCDs, they were to convert into an equity such that the shareholding of the foreign investor goes up to 99%. So therefore, the foreign investor in effect owned the holdco by the end of it, and any benefit which was there or deriving, which the holdco was deriving through the OCDs, would ultimately vest in the foreign investor. And on this basis, the court obviously disregarded this point of ultimate exit by the foreign investor from the holdco also being subject to pricing guidelines. There were obviously certain other arguments which were also made before the court. The court dealt with those arguments and ruled in favor of the promoters who had raised these objections of non-compliance with FDI regulations or the foreign investment regulations. So on these basis, the court ultimately ruled that this transaction was a colorable device, it was not enforceable, and that the court would not provide assistance to the petitioners in term for enforcement of this transaction. Now, an important aspect over here is that the petitions which were filed were a winding up petition and a summary suit. Both these petitions, the adjudication done by the court is in summary form. So therefore, the observations of the court on the facts of the case were prima facie in nature, and the court determined that prima facie these facts certainly seem to provide for a colorable device, which is to circumvent the foreign exchange control regulations and therefore are unenforceable.
Sure. I think a couple of points on the contractual rights also resulted in the structure being held illegal. I think the first point was on
indeed
the fact that only the nominees of the foreign investor can instruct the debenture trustee
indeed
with respect to the you know, invocation of security or any matters relating to debenture. And the second point was with respect to any matter relating to the debentures, the directors of the promoter and the holding company of promoter, they will be considered as interested directors.
Indeed.
So anything with respect to debenture, only the nominees of the foreign investor can vote with respect to that. So that, I think those were two additional points based on which the courts held that, you know, the intent was always to disregard the holdco or the promoter shareholders of holdco for the purpose of decision.
This came specifically in regard to the fact that it was suggested that Vinca is a, or the holdco is a completely separate legal entity, and therefore the investment was flowing down from Vinca into a completely separate legal entity being the subsidiaries or the opcos. So while this argument was made in that regard, the court specifically noted that this holdco or this entity which has been there in the middle is nothing but a nominal recipient of the FDI. The court accepted the argument of the respondent in this regard, and to, while accepting the argument, they actually made observation on these particular rights which were structured under the articles and the agreements which were entered into, as Nishul Karan pointed out, more being one, or the effect of the rights which was to ensure that the OCDs or anything to do with the OCDs or the debenture trustee was undertaken by the or decisions thereon were made by the nominee directors of the foreign investor on the board of the holdco.
Okay. So, Richard, we have the judgment in place now. Do you think there were any points which were missed out by the foreign investor in arguing that the structure is legal?
Yeah, so I think my reading is obviously limited to the judgment.
Sure.
And what comes out in written form in the judgment, there might have been many points which have been made, didn't come out. But I think just, you know, if you look at the frame of the judgment, right, one of the points that they make is that the holdco was nothing else but more of a conduit entity or a sham, right? I think that itself needs to be questioned. If today I invest in a holdco, right, and there can be many structures. Holdco investment structures are very common. I may invest in a holdco because tomorrow I want to take my holdco public or IPO with the downstream entities. There might be reason for me to invest in the holdco because I don't want to get limited to my, you know, to my equity interest being limited to that one asset of the subsidiary, but a larger asset base of the holdco. There might be lender restrictions which prevent me from changing the shareholding at the subsidiary level. There might be other restrictions. So I think if each of those aspects need to be looked a little closely, and it has to be established that my holdco was not really a conduit entity, but there was proper commercial justification for me to use the holdco. Now, what were the facts and circumstances? I'm not the best judge, but I think this is really something, you know, which is very fact specific, and each one, you know, each fact will need to be analyzed. But I think that substance part is very critical. The court, in order to establish that there was, you know, that the holdco was really a sham entity, used a lot of arguments. So said that, you know, well, you had as CCD holder affirmative rights, and only you could decide on the matters with respect to the OCDs or with respect to the affairs of the subsidiaries assets. So, well, what's wrong with that, you know? I mean, today if I invest into a holdco, one of my core assets could be in a subsidiary. I can have tracking rights. I can have rights to protect my interest. Even today, you know, there are rights that you cannot sell substantial assets, or, you know, you cannot do X, Y, Z things with respect to certain assets. My, you know, one of my core assets is really in that subsidiary. So I'm really protecting my rights to that extent, you know. I think the court then went ahead and, based on all the argument that we see, has said that, you know, this was an assured return structure. Now let's go back to the, you know, why is assured return such a bad word? Assured return really goes back to 2007 circular, where the, you know, where the RBI said that under FDI, foreign investment will only be permitted into capital, which only means equity and instruments compulsorily convertible into equity. But that was really in context of money going out to a non-resident when there's a repatriation of proceeds. Here, merely because I'm a foreign owned and controlled company does not make me a foreign company. If that was so, then the probably language would be that for all practical purposes, a foreign owned and controlled company would be a foreign company. That means I cannot do any intercorporate deposits also. I cannot even lend, do nothing, which is not the case. Right? So, the question is that to what extent do you apply the assured return policy? If the money still remains in India, it is being upstreamed to a holdco. I don't think it really violates the October 07 circular. And the downstream investment policy of, you know, in context of FDI, really restrict downstream investment only from the perspective of entry and conditionalities and sectoral caps. So even if this entity was entirely, first point is that this entity was really only a 10% FDI entity. I mean, there was only foreign investment of 10%. Even if it was 100% FDI, even then it could have done OCDs. There is no restriction today in the FDI policy to do that. So I think that is one of the critical parts. The foreign, and I think a perspective has been given to the court that the, you know, that FMO really wanted to have an assured return. Right. Where is the assured return? I mean, as I said earlier, CCDs could anyways, they could have anyways taken assured return on the CCDs, which was possible. They could have done CCDs also downstream, wherein the assured return could have come and they were only taking 14.5%, which is perfectly legit within the policy. But even if there is a CCD, you know, at the top level, there is no repatriation possible without, even if I'm subscribing to redeemable debentures downstream, there is no redemption possible at my CCD level. Because I will necessarily have to convert my CCDs into equity. So I am definitely taking the equity risk. So I think even on a conceptual basis, there is complete equity risk that the investor is taking. What happens if one of the projects at the holdco level goes bank? And there were projects at the holdco level. Then the foreign investor is definitely taking a risk. So, yes, at the downstream level, there is to some extent a security cover, but that does not mean that I am having I am having complete repatriation ability. Assured return, to some extent, by way of coupon, is anyways allowed to be. And I think one last point, which I think, you know, the court has made in this is that foreign, the court has set out in one of the paragraphs in judgment that when you bring in foreign investment, and in this case the foreign investment came in for developmental capital under PN2, you can use it only for the purpose of developmental capital and not for any other purpose. Now, I think this is a very important, because court said that once you brought in money into a company which was engaged in construction development, you should have used the money only for construction development and not for any other purpose. And the fact that we used that money for making a downstream investment into my own 100% subsidiary was a violation of the FDI policy. Now, that I think is a little bit of informed ground, because again, the FDI policy does not suggest any end use restrictions. So what the FDI policy says is, bring in FDI into a company that is engaged in FDI compliant activity. But it does not restrict you or does not require you to use that money only for that activity. If that was the case, then probably none of the secondary investments would ever work. Right? Because a non-resident can buy another non-resident out. So the money doesn't get into the company, it doesn't get used for developmental capital. So the key is that the money should be used, can be used for any purpose, provided it is in one of the automatic sectors. Obviously, you cannot use, you cannot bring in money saying this is into an FDI permissible activity and then use it for FDI approved or restricted sectors. But so long as you are within the FD, you know, one of the automatic sectors, you can do a secondary trade. Because going by the post logic, I would never be able to do a secondary trade in FDI any which way, because the cash would never hit the company's balance sheet when you're doing a secondary transaction in FDI or anywhere. So I think those are largely the broad contours, you know, which I think could have been impressed upon more. But, you know, as I say, you know, hard facts make bad law. So I think what has happened over here is that, you know, one SARA comes and all kind of OCD structures kind of get challenged. So I think the key is here that one of the summary judgment, we should look at everything in the specific set of facts and circumstances. It does not mean today that because this has come, all the 495, you know, 51 structures or things like that will be, you know, will be washed away. I don't think that is the rationale we should draw from this. But I think one rationale we should definitely draw from this is be careful on what you're writing, how you're writing, and how you're presenting everything.
Sure. So you're right. So I think there are many lessons to be learned from the judgment. I think the most important lesson is when you are structuring the transaction, does it pass the smell test? I think 5 or 10 years down the line, this was not a critical issue. The regulators in India were not smart enough to attack the structures devised by the consultants. But in the last 5 years, in fact, post the Vodafone tax controversy, we have been seeing that all the regulators have started understanding the structures and are up to speed on whatever is happening on a real-time basis. So it's very important that any structure that is devised is not only compliant with the law or the letter of the law, but also with the spirit of the law. Second most important lesson to be learned is documentation. How you document your structure is very critical. Your structure may be compliant from a letter perspective, from a spirit perspective also, but if your documentation doesn't support the spirit, then that could also create a lot of issues. And this was a classic case where the documentation didn't support the structure, where there was a direct link that was created between the foreign investor nominee with the debenture trustee, who was a debenture trustee of the OPCOs and the beneficial owner or the beneficial interest holder of the proceeds from the debenture was going to be Holdco and not the foreign investor directly. So how you document the structure and the recitals of the document become very critical. You need to give justification for each and every step in the structure. And this is something that we have been doing, in fact, in the last 3 or 4 years when GAR was first proposed to be introduced, where it has become very important that each and every clause in the agreement is looked at from a spirit perspective. There is a real commercial justification which is given for each and every clause in the document or a step in the structure. And most important thing is reduce the complexity in the structure. I think all of us are heading towards a situation where lesser the complexity in the structure, it is easier to defend before the courts and the arbitrators. At times, a complex structure becomes difficult to justify to the regulators or to the court or to the arbitrator because you know, more the complexity, the more you have to do the explanation, and they may not understand. If they don't understand even one step in the structure, then there could be issues on challenge to the structure. Again, one of the things that we have been doing and it has worked very well is get your document reviewed by the litigation team when you are entering into any investment agreement or share purchase agreement, because that helps a lot at the time of investment on what could be the potential issues which could be faced, rather than getting the litigation team in picture at the time when, you know, the dispute has happened and then you can't change whatever has already happened. So these are some of the lessons, you know, which we can learn from this judgment. And maybe I think, Rochir, my last question to you is, do you think this structure could have been implemented differently, in which case the issues wouldn't have arisen?
Yeah, so one is that So currently it invested into a holdco, which in turn use OCDs to invest into the opco. And there was a mortgage created in favor of the holdco. In favor of the venture trustee for acting for the holdco. I think even if they did this directly, even if the CCDs came in directly into the opco, probably the intent would have been achieved. Because the assured return of what the court believes to be illegit could have been legitimately taken because they could have invested directly at the opco level. The opco, both the opcos could have upstream a 14.5% easy coupon, you know, to FMO directly. And well, if there was a default, the CCDs in the opco could easily convert into 99.9% of the opco, which could anyways give them a much better ride than what they got through a mortgage through a depository trustee, because there is no better ride than ownership over the asset, right? So I could have anyways done it directly, getting my assured return and getting whatever protection that I needed in case my investment goes back. And I can always time my triggers for conversion the way I commercially want. There is no RBI prescription on that to that extent. I think, but they might have their own reasons, you know, and we are obviously not privy to them considering the limited scope, the limited knowledge that we have, but that could be one option. The other structure which I think has become pretty popular and, you know, as Prof. Shodhavag, I think 75% of the structured equity deals in 2014 were done through this, is the listed non-convertible debenture structure. So you get in, so the Indian company issues non-convertible debentures to a non-resident, and today the way the regime stands, because these are listed instruments, they need to be subscribed by an eligible foreign investor, which is a foreign portfolio investor. And the way the regime has been deregulated in the past couple of years, almost any non-resident can register as a foreign portfolio investor. There is no broad-basing, etc. required, you know, if you're SPI Category 3, as it used to be earlier. So, you know, any non-resident can today subscribe to these listed non-convertible debenture listing is just a process of a couple of days, couple of pages of disclosures, and that instrument would allow you to take one, an interest which is way beyond your 14.5%. You know there is no regulatory restriction on the amount of interest which can be paid. There's obviously some tax issues, but from a regulatory perspective, there is no restriction on the amount of coupon that you could pay on a debenture instrument, and you can very legitimately create security interest or whatever kind on the instrument. So you can create mortgage, you can create pledge, you can take guarantees and everything. So there is, I think, if really the intent was to do a assured return and also get a security interest, I think probably a simpler structure could have been to do an NCD directly into both these companies. The process is pretty cheap, pretty simple. I think, and it also offers substantial tax optimization benefits. That is all detailed in one of our research papers, which is on our website. But essentially, you know, there were these two possible structures which I see: do it directly or do it through the listed structured debt route.
Sure, and especially the deal was done in 2009, so the listing of debt regulations had come out in 2008, so
yeah,
the NCD structure could have been done.
Correct.
Well,
it was very much
popular. Sure. Ashish, you want to add anything before
we
take a question?
Sure. So this one last point, this is not in context of how structures are done or not, but definitely stress upon the importance of ensuring that whatever structures are there, questions such as these do not arise. The reason being that the courts have now categorically held, or in fact they have now taken up from a previous Supreme Court judgment, and relied upon saying that the exchange control regulations form part of the public policy of India. Now, even if you go for arbitrations or any other aspect, well, in cases of arbitrations, the stage at which we see arbitrations also face a lot of significant delay is where the award is finally challenged under Section 34 of the Indian Arbitration Act, or foreign award which when brought into enforcement for enforcement is objected to under Section 48 of the Indian Arbitration Act. Both of them allow public policy as a ground for objection. So, and here it's in the judgment, it has been reiterated that the exchange control regulations do form part of the public policy. So therefore, to avoid any such delays, even in adjudication of the disputes, investors or otherwise stakeholders would do well to actually note and make sure that the structures in that sense cannot be so easily questioned on grounds of being or being in violation of the exchange control regulation. So that's probably one last takeaway on this.
Okay. So I think we can open the floor for questions.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use only handsets while asking a question. Anyone who wishes to ask a question, please press star and 1 at this time. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Ram Bhushan Kanuri from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, Nishal and team. Before I ask, congratulations for winning the second time in a row the Financial Times Award. As we were going through this session, which was pretty interesting, I got an email announcing the same.
Thanks.
Yeah. There are three primary observations that I had and want your views on it. One, clearly, if the CCDs were converted at the parent entity, it would have resulted in an ownership which was close to 99%. So, A, can we actually call this as a operating cum holding company or a substantive operating and holding company? From an FDI compliance, probably yes, but in spirit, if one were to look at it, does that result in any complication? The second question, observation was, if instead of 99%, it was to, if the foreign owner, FMO, had only, say, a minority interest, less than 50%, without any control, would the analysis be any different? Because then the holding company would have been an Indian entity. And the third, which is independent, probably it was not the subject matter of the High Court, was Uptown, as an issuer, was equally responsible for issuing the securities. Any impact on an issuer as opposed to just an investor? Thank you.
Okay, so on the first question, the Holdco, which was NIMCA, it had a real estate project. So it was an operating cum holding company. It was not a pure holding company. Because if it was a pure holding company, FMO or the foreign investor would have required a prior FIPB approval for the investment. This was an operating cum holding company, which is also one of the reasons why there was no non-banking finance service company issue also in the structure, because the operating income would have always been more than the financial income. On your second question on whether the case would have been much better if the conversion was below 50% without control, the answer is definitely yes, because one of the observations which has been made is that because you are in going to be in 100% control of the holdco, it is as good as being in 100% control of the opco, which means that the assured return which was promised to the holdco is nothing but assured return promised to the foreign investor. So if it was only less than 50%, then you know, the argument couldn't have been made that the assured return is promised to the foreign investor and not to the holdco. On the third question, Ashish, you want to say, so Uptown was actually not the issuer. Uptown was the majority shareholder of the issuer, which is NIMCA. And Uptown had given the corporate guarantee for the optionally convertible debentures issued by OPCO. And because Uptown was the defaulter, because it didn't pay the dues under the corporate guarantee document, that is the reason Uptown is party to the suit. And maybe you want to...
So, no, in terms of the... fact that it was also suggested that the respondents who had received this investment cannot take up these arguments that the structure is in violation of the FDI policy. But the court in this regard noted that the petitioners, by their conduct, were equally party to the transaction and were equally responsible for it being devised in such manner as it is. So therefore, looking at petitioner being also equally responsible, the court said, or in this case, the doctrine in question was the doctrine of pari delicto, which provides that a party can cannot basically recover in an action where it is necessary to prove the existence of an illegal contract in order for that party to actually make a recovery. So the court said that this doctrine would be actually applicable in the present case, and even though there were representations there from the promoters or the other parties to the for investors, by the conduct for investors had shown that they were equally well aware of the regulations, and these steps or the structuring which was done was a conscious act or conscious devices which were undertaken by the parties acting together.
Thank you. So on the first question, actually, I had a slightly different view. While it was clearly an operating cum holdco, given it had Vinca was having some other FDI compliant projects, the fact is that if the conversion translated into 99% and the entire money had gone into the two subsidiaries, which is Amazia and Rubix, the entire value was being driven by Amazia and Rubix from a purely financial perspective or a commercial perspective. And hence, to say that the holdco is operating cum holdco could probably be challenged, as opposed to it actually being deriving some revenues and maybe the entire amount which was invested translated to lower amount. On the third, I just wanted to modify my question to say, ask if as an issuer, does Vinca have any responsibility, and is there any other law outside of this High Court judgment that it gets violated and any action that would be taken?
Sorry, I'll answer the first question. When we say it's an operating income holding company, it's more from a foreign investment perspective. From the judgment perspective, what the court has said that it's purely a holding company because the other real estate project was not part of the transaction. So when I'm saying it's a holdco cum opco, it's more from a foreign investment perspective for whether to take FIPB approval or not. But as far as the judgment is concerned, it is very clear that the courts have considered the holdco or Vimca as a holdco and not holdco cum opco. Because if the foreign investor was able to prove that the holdco and the real estate project in the holdco was also something which they were exposed to, then their case would have been much better. In fact, that's the crux of the entire judgment, that if the foreign investor was able to prove that there was a real reason for using the holdco in the structure, then this entire analysis or the judgment could have been different. On your third question, can you just repeat if you don't mind?
No. So there are three parties here
which
potentially entered into this agreement, FMO, Hubtown, and Vinca.
Right.
Now, FOMO clearly is paying the price for having entered into something which was not legal at that point of time and contract. What is the impact on the issuer, which is Vinca? Clearly, the High Court didn't get into the merits of that, but any other regulator or authorities, would they look at it now differently given the judgment?
So here it is to be understood that this action is taking on account of instructions of Vinca itself. So here the parties to the actual OCDs or the guarantee given on the OCDs whose enforcement is being sought through these petitions, the parties to these documents were the debenture trustee, the guarantor that is Hubtown, and Vinca, that is the person who had received the basically OCDs and obviously the issuer, the subsidiaries which were there. So these were the parties to these documents. In this case, the actions were initiated by the debenture trustee acting for the benefit of the debenture holders, which is Vinca. What court actually viewed was that Vinca was not acting independently, or it didn't have an independent board in that sense. Here, the Vinca was acting through the nominee directors of FMO, that is the foreign investor. So here, issuer itself is the person who has led or has instructed the debenture trustee to undertake the actions which have resulted in this.
No, I think just to add, I think because I think you're asking that can there be any other regulatory action? Yes, possible. You know that this kind of gives a great impetus to the regulators to kind of look at these structures as sham, and you can't rule out the possibility of the RBI approaching. You know, both FMO also and Vimca and even, you know, the subsidiaries, but I think it will largely be FMO and Vimca that they will approach. And, you know, they might say that, you know, this entire investment is in violation of the FDI policy. This is entirely a sham. And therefore, you please approach to me for compounding and all assured return provisions, etc. should be, you know, should be written out. So that kind of regulatory action is possible, which will clearly impact both the parties.
Yeah. Sorry, just to explain where I'm coming from is when you try and explain this to offshore clients, the way it looks like Vinca is nothing but FMO for all practical purposes if it's going to be 99% ownership. The two subsidiaries and Uptown, which were trying to get derive some benefit, potentially have gone scot-free, and it's only the foreign investor, which seems, at least from this judgment, which has to pay the price.
So I think the issue is not with 99% alone. I think the bigger issue is whether Holdco has a role to play in the entire structure. You can still convert into 99% if there was sufficient justification to prove that Holdco had some reason. Like, for example, if you want exposure in multiple businesses of the group, you'll invest in Holdco. If there are issues with the lender approvals at the subsidiary company and you want investment such that you know, you have to bag a project, in that situation you may have to invest in Holdco so that Holdco puts money in the OPCO and there is no change in shareholding pattern which will not require any lender's approval. So if you are able to justify the reason for use of Holdco, clearly 99% also is not an issue. The issue in this case was that there was no justification which was given proper justification that was given for use of the Holdco in the structure. And that is why 99% conversion of debentures into equity became an issue. So either give proper justification for use of Holdco, or as we discussed, if there is no justification, then if they would have converted into less than 50%, which commercially wouldn't have made any sense, then in that situation, the judgment would have been different as compared to what we have today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please press star and one if you would like to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Russell Wong from Astra Overseas Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks very much for this interesting session. I just had the one question, whether this could be industry specific, or is it something that the other industries would have to worry about? Thanks.
I think it's more than industry specific, it is fact specific. So even within the same industry, which is like a real estate sector, if the facts are different or if you are able to justify why you have used a particular structure, then that shouldn't be a problem. Like, for example, these type of structures, Holdco, OPCO structures are very common in infrastructure sector because typically you have a holding company which will do multiple joint ventures for solar wind projects with other operators. And in that situation, the structure is very common. And as long as you are able to justify that there was a reason for use of Holdco or investing in Holdco, there should not be any problem. So more than industry specific, this is a fact specific situation.
Yeah, but it will, the principles of this case will apply across sectors.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all our participants, please use star and one if you would like to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Ketan Suneji from SKP Business Consulting. Please go ahead.
What could be the repercussions from income tax department's perspective? Can they disallow the payment made by Amazia and Rubix to Vinca, or the other case, the payment made by Vinca to FMO on the CCDs?
No, I don't think this should have any implication from a tax perspective.
Okay.
because, in fact, you know, even the regulator has taken a view that the actual return structure, so no one is questioning the nature of it. So no one is calling debt as equity. In fact, equity is being called as debt. So I don't see any issue from a tax perspective at either level or any disallowance.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please press star and one if you would like to ask a question. Anyone who wish to ask a question may press star and one at this time. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the floor over to Mr. Nischal Joshipura for closing comments.
Sure. So thanks to all the participants for joining this webinar. If you have any further questions, feel free to write to us at copwebinar@nishitdesai.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Nishit Desai Associates, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.